Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh, Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Throw game for the win! Taylor's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, and welcome in to Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle. I am the guest host this week, finishing up this week, and Jim will be back next week. After he's charged up these batteries again, getting ready for a big stretch here the rest of the July right into August. But I appreciate you joining us here today, Friday. It's time for the weekend. Time to get things ready to enjoy a nice weekend here in the Hoosier State. And I think those that are in our YouTube page, make sure you subscribe and hit the notification bell for not only that page, but the Hoosier.com page so that you're notified when something like this, a live show or a video drops, so that you get notified of all that. I want to thank all those listeners out there on our radio stations, 1380 The Fan up in Fort Wayne, my home station, gearing up for high school football pretty soon as we get ready for that up here in Northeast Indiana. I'm part of the 1380 crew that will call Friday nights in and around the Summit City or down in Evansville, the Ref 97.7. Thank you for being a part of all this. Listen to us today and then up in the region, WJOB, Jed TV is all a part of this. Great morning here coming up. We're going to have Todd Leary come on, and we'll talk with him some things about Hoosier basketball, get a former player's insight into all things Indiana basketball at this moment in time, now that everybody's had a chance to not only sit back and reflect on the hire, but also reflect on what coach and his staff has done in the recruiting game and get Todd's perspective from a former player and whether or not former players maybe have been reached out to re-engage some of those top players from years past that have that winning mindset, had some of the great years under Coach Knight. You know, those are all valuable things in a program like Indiana that you have at your fingertip. So we'll talk to Todd some about that. We're also going to have Zach Osterman on. We'll talk a bevy of things with Zach, a little bit of football in the recruiting phase, what his take is on that, some of the the NIL rev sharing scenarios within not only the Big Ten, but more specifically Indiana, what he sees there, and get a take on his expertise in the area. And of course, we'll get in some basketball there as well. And then we'll also have Kyler Staley from thehoosier.com, a young man with a wealth of basketball knowledge. Every time I turned around over the holiday weekend in the early part of July, I swear that young man was in every gym in the state of Indiana watching ball games. And the work that they do there at thehoosier.com and coverage is second to none. Remember, get over there today, get your $1 first month subscription, 50% off for the rest of the year to all the Hoosier.com material, including behind the paywall. where you can find yours truly giving you all the breakdowns of Indiana's football recruits to date. We'll also get access, as always, is to my show, the Hoosier Football Tailgate. We'll be back in action next Thursday as we get rolling towards the start of camp and also the Big Ten Media Days on tap with all that. And you also get all the on3.com and Rivals stuff, especially in the recruiting arena. Man, oh man, those two with the recruiting is unbelievable. So get on over there today, pick up that subscription and be a part of thehoosier.com and everything that is Indiana athletics. Saw today that the Colts and some rumor mill stuff is going on out there about the quarterback position with Anthony Richardson and his shoulder. I got a feeling that that shoulder is not going to be a healed component or is going to continue to give him problems. But there has been a kind of a, I don't know if you want to call it a rumbling per se, but this notion that the Colts are looking at potentially, or should be potentially looking at, someone like Kirk Cousins, who is in Atlanta, where he has been basically beat out by former quarterback here at Indiana, Michael Penix Jr. Cousin has the experience. He's been to four Pro Bowls. He's had over seven seasons of 4,000 yards passing, a 67% completion rate. You know, there's a lot of pluses about Kirk Cousins as a potential in Indy. I think right now Daniel Jones is on top of that quarterback race to be the starter for the Colts this year. But there are some actual rumblings that Steichen and Ballard, because they are on the proverbial hot seat, Kirk Cousins would definitely give them something of a leader at a position where he has the resume to show, especially in a locker room, that he can be that quarterback that can help them win games. Now, again, I never understood Atlanta and what they did with him when they signed him to that, I think it was like $180 million contract. And then they went out and drafted Penix. And again, I don't fault them for drafting Penix. I would have drafted Penix. The kid's got a great arm, and I think he's going to be a tremendous pro quarterback once he gets that experience under his belt. But it was kind of an odd situation that you do that, and then all of a sudden, this past year, Cousins had some struggles, and they went ahead and put Michael in the position to be the guy, and he took off and was the guy. So now there's Kirk's Cousins seeing at the helm of a possible trade. But like I said, these are rumblings and rumors. This is not pure fact. This is kind of the at the bar table in your local pub, drawing on a piece of paper what you think the Colts should do and how they should do it. But I don't think it's very likely this will happen. I think there's too much there in terms of cost. And the fact that Kirk Cousins is 37 and he's not a long-term solution. So I found that interesting that there's already rumblings out there about the potential of a Colts trade to Atlanta for Kirk Cousins' services. And I think it's just that. It's just rumor at this point. Now, Anthony Richardson, we talked a little bit about this with Bob Gravitz yesterday. I mean, he's got this bum shoulder. It's something that has plagued him very, you know, for the better part of his college and pro career at this point. And so it's not like he is 100% either. And so, you know, now you understand they went out on top of all this and got Riley Leonard at a bargain. And he's the guy that's just kind of waiting in the background to let the dominoes fall, where he may be in a position to pick it all up and take off and be the guy, because he's proven in college that A, he can win ball games at two different places. One where the pressure is very, very big at Notre Dame, and he got him to the finals in the college football playoffs. And then what he did at Duke. So you can't sit here and say that they don't have a winner in Riley Leonard. And I like Riley Leonard from the standpoint, I think he's a very good all-around quarterback and will be a good all-around pro, going from the practice field to the film room and studying the game and understanding the game. I think he's the guy that puts the work in. That's the knock against AR. He just really hasn't put the work in to be that type of NFL quarterback where you've got to spend time in the film room watching tape, dissecting tape, and then take that to the field and become a all-time, big-time NFL quarterback. And I just don't think he's done that. And then, of course, his throwing and things have not been overly consistent nor accurate. So I do think Daniel Jones is going to be given a chance to lead. And we'll see what all happens. But I thought that was an interesting subject material to bring up to the forefront in all this. And we'll see what all happens here in a few minutes with all that. And the last thing, I don't know if anyone has seen this, but there is already college football rev share red flags when it comes to athletic departments being able to put themselves in a position to not have deficits. Now, Indiana did a pretty good job of preparing for all this, and they've done a great job with some of the things they've done there at Indiana with the Hoosier Connect, and then some things they're doing in the stadium with the seat naming opportunities for like $200 bucks. Michigan is projecting a $27 million budget deficit, and 20 of it being tied to the rev share paying of athletes. So now Michigan, I know that our hearts bleed for Michigan, right? Michigan is cutting roughly 10% of the athletic staff to trim $10 million in cost. There's a lot of people there making some really good money. If 10% of their staff is being deducted, and it's netting them $10 million. And then when you look at it, they are slashing TV related spending and travel, and they're looking to host non-sporting events like concerts to boost non-athletic revenue. That to me is crazy, that you would think Michigan, one of the big time schools, not only in the Big Ten in the country, is in a position where they are going to have a $27 million budget deficit. It doesn't seem like it's even possible. So I think, you know, Urban Meyer had a good take on all this, is he's predicting that, this will force schools to turn to more private equity, increasing of student fees and outside revenue to stay viable. And I think in the long run, we're going to see, like they do in the soccer leagues or overseas and stuff, we're going to see advertising on the jerseys, pants and such to earn revenue for the athletic department. Hey, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to get Todd Larry on and talk to him a little bit about some Hoosier basketball. We'll do all that right after this, right here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Andy. Welcome back to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. I'm the coach, Shannon Griffith, sitting in for Mr. Jim Coyle this week. And now joining us Mr. Todd Leary. Todd, pleasure to meet you, even though it's kind of in this ironic phase of online handshakes and things like that. I see you're traveling down the road. Where are you headed?
I am headed up to Indianapolis right now.
All right. Well, be safe out there. And I know there may be some rain today, but hopefully we get through it all. And it turns out to be a great day and also a great weekend. But we appreciate the taking the time to join us here this morning. And wanted to take a look at, you know, some of the things that are happening with Indiana basketball right now. I was saying this, my background is in coaching. I coached at Ball State for a number of years back in early 2000s and such under Bill Lynch, who was a coach here at Indiana at one point in time. And then, you know, my family, my son Isaac, played at Indiana under Kevin Wilson as a wide receiver. Now, you know, now that things have kind of settled and you as a former player under definitely one of the best coaches in college basketball, what has been your take now on this hire by Scott Dolson with Coach DeVries, and how do you see that fitting into the Indiana makeup? I mean, as a former player, how do you see this hire when you just look at it? Not only from afar, but I'm sure you've had an opportunity to discuss this a multitude of times with other people.
Yeah, I mean, I think my biggest takeaway from this hire is that Coach DeVries is a basketball guy. And I've kind of been saying that for a while, but I also probably need to clarify that a little bit, because I think Tom Crean was a basketball guy, and I think Archie Miller was a basketball guy.
Sure.
I don't necessarily think Mike Woodson was a basketball guy. Now, he's been in basketball his whole life, yes, but I... Like, he doesn't live and breathe on Indiana basketball winning and winning. And that's what this job takes. And it takes someone that is their main focus and their goal. And I think that's what Coach DeVries brings. He's a basketball guy. He thinks basketball 24/7. He's constantly, always, if you've ever seen him out, he's always on the phone. He's always working. He's always doing stuff to bring in recruits and talk to players and things like that. So, I mean, that to me was the biggest takeaway. Now, what will they look like on the floor? You know, I mean, all of us are just guessing at this point. You piece together what Coach DeVries' teams looked like at Drake and in West Virginia last year, and you just kind of piece all that together and think that you know with the new roster what it's going to look like, but I doubt they even really know. Like, they have a better idea than us, but I doubt they even really know what it's going to look like until they're able to, you know, go on that trip next month and get guys playing in some game situations. And then they'll start to develop, who can they rely on? Who do they go to when they need this and that? Having your fifth year player son on the team that's, you know, it was all conference pretty much everywhere he's been. As long as he can stay healthy, what a major benefit that is for Coach DeVries. And so, you know, he will not only – this year will be unique for him as well in that it's his first year at a new place and he's got a son that can kind of give him some inside scoop on what players are thinking. I know probably people mostly – as coaching, you probably understand this pretty well, but, you know – players and coaching staffs are not always on the same page and not thinking down the same lines. And it really helps to be able to have somebody on both sides of that where, Tucker DeVries can really, I think, give some insight into what would be the best way to handle things. Because you got a whole new locker room. You got, right, you know, all new guys. They're not just new to Indiana. They're new to Coach DeVries and everybody. So, as a former player, I think I'm excited about the takeaway of having Coach DeVries as a basketball guy that's in there. He works hard. That was how Coach Signetti basically sold himself is, you know, I'm going to work hard. And it's worked out pretty well for him. And I think we're getting kind of the same thing with Coach DeVries.
Yeah, I happen to agree with that sentiment as well, that you got kind of the same backgrounds in the two gentlemen in what they bring to the table from a coaching standpoint, but also from a winning standpoint. You know, they've been at places where winning may not be as easy as one thinks, and they've been able to turn things around and make programs successful. Now, has Coach had an opportunity to really reach back into the past with former players and stuff and really have some engaging conversations where, you know, he may be talking about Indiana, getting a perspective from you or other players that played at Indiana, for that matter, just from a standpoint, you're coming to a state where it's basketball crazy and everybody that's in attending a game is an expert in their own right.
No doubt about that. And we're all that way. You know, as former players, now that's just a description. Like, I'm just a fan, just like everyone else is. Sometimes I get a little bit more access and get a little bit more information. I used to know, you know, it's an interesting time because it's not been this way under any of our, as former players, you know, post-basketball lives, in that we don't really know anyone there anymore. And, you know, we've always known Tim Garl, or, you know, we still know Dolson. You know, Dolson was a manager.
Yeah.
Back when I was there. And so, like, we still have, but he's even, you know, he's even too high up the ladder to, for instance, he doesn't know a lot of the inside stuff. Heck, I know a lot of things before he does, just because he's dealing with all the other sports and everything going on. So, you know, that aspect of it is a little bit unique in that, you know, we don't really have anyone there that's a contact that we used to have. You know, Coach DeVries had a FaceTime call with a bunch of former players, you know, right away early on. And I'm going to say this as point blank as I can be about it without trying to stir anything up. But, I mean, all coaches say they want to have a relationship with past players and all that stuff or whatever. And in my past, I've never really seen anyone follow through on that. And I don't even really care if they do, other than I want them to put a good product out on the court and win. And, you know, we'll all be proud of that from a little bit farther distance, maybe, than what we were before. But I would rather have that than, you know, have them have us back all the time for different events and things like that, and us still not be a great team. So I'll take that trade off anytime. And it may end up happening. Look, I just said it a minute ago. This is a unique situation. It's year one I know he was at year one last year at West Virginia, but I don't think many people are going to compare West Virginia basketball and Indiana basketball. So it's a different animal, and he shouldn't be too worried about what former players or anyone thinks right now. I hope he's not. I hope he's more, and I know he's more focused and worried about what they're doing and their workouts and their guys right now and putting his process in place. And I, you know, Coach Signetti, I'm sure, embraces the former football players and all that, but I mean, he had a job to do. And I think he was laser focused on getting that job done. And you can worry about dealing with the former players and all that stuff when they're happy with a smile on their face because your team's winning. That's a lot easier to mend that situation than it is to try to win everybody back when your team is struggling. So I like that he's focused on that side of it. As a former player, I don't expect too much more information than what we already have and all those things. It's just we'll kind of learn just as everyone else does.
All right. I believe I'm back, and hopefully Todd's there too. I tell you, this is going to be a crazy, crazy morning. I do not know what happened there, but everything just kind of went into slow motion and then boom, it all went away. So I apologize for that. I don't know if that was my internet service being, you know, like it has been a couple times already, or that was just something with the software that changed and kicked us both out. But anyway, let's carry on. That we're back and ready and everything from that standpoint. Indiana gets that foreign tour, I guess you say, down in Puerto Rico coming up here in the month of August 5th through 12th, to be exact. And this can, I mean, I guess you would say as a basketball coach or player or anything else, this is an invaluable experience to take, not only from the travel aspect, that's one thing, but this is the first time people are going to be able to have eyes on the basketball team that's been assembled here, not the black and white on paper, the true talent that will be there. What are some of the things, you know, expectations when you think about this team playing in this three-game tour, Puerto Rican All-Stars and this pro team out of Serbia? What are you looking for from Indiana during this time in this three-game set?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one, yeah, it is invaluable. From a coaching perspective, they get, you know, the extra practices, they get the time together, and they get to see the guys play on the court against other bodies. And you can, you know, you a lot of people don't think about the fact of in practice, especially in the preseason, or pre-conference, I should say, you know, you're practicing against the same guys every day. And I mean, those guys that are also, you know, the second squad, like they know the plays that you're running. They know everything that you're doing. They know your tendencies because they see you do it every day. It's much more difficult, honestly, to play in practice, to run an offense in practice when the other team knows the plays and knows what you're running. And this is an opportunity for them to go put it against other, you know, other bodies and other guys they're not used to playing against. And so, you know, that from that aspect, it's invaluable from a coaching and players perspective. But you know, as a fan, what I want to see, we're all going to want them to win. Sure, we're going to want them to win. But that isn't really going to tell us a whole lot. If they win all the games by 30 or if they lose them all by 30, that's really not going to tell us a whole lot. What I want to see how they play together. I want to see statistically, like how they shoot the ball, how they share the ball. I'm interested to see, is it going to be a heavy guard ball dominant offense? Is it going to be a ball movement flying all over the floor? You know, what's it going to look like? And that I'm interested to see the pace, like how fast will they play? And those are the things I'll take away from it. And so, you know, they're going to look, I'm assuming that they're going to look a little rusty. It's going to be a new situation for all of them. Yes, a lot of these guys have played in college basketball, some of them for many years, but this is a different animal. None of them have played at a place like Indiana, not just Indiana, but at a school as big as what Indiana basketball is. So it's a new experience for them as well. And I'll be interested to see how they play together. You know, like they've all got their NIL contracts and money and that stuff now. Now it's time to go earn that and show why they paid you the money. And the real interesting thing in an early, you know, season or an off season little three game schedule like this is you get to see how they're going to play as a team, who's selfish.
Right.
And selfish is not always a bad thing. Like I think that comes mm-hmm. across as a negative connotation in basketball. You've got to be a little bit selfish. All of the great, great, great players are all little selfish, some of them more than others, but you know that you just want to see who's the guy that's going to step up and what guys are going to do what, who's your defensive stoppers, who's your rebounders. You know, you really see what holes need to be filled in a situation like this more than you come away with, oh, we're great at blank. And so those are the holes that they'll work on, you know, through the rest of August, September, October, until we get into that early November, because the schedule starts out hot right off the bat.
Yeah, and the other thing here is with this tournament, you get those 10, I think they get 10 extra practices prior to going down. And just like in spring football being, you know, that being of vital importance in terms yep. of repetitions, not just for your top five, you're talking your whole, you know, your whole bench. I mean, that's the key component there is that. But one thing here, before I have to take a break real quick, I know that you're going to graciously stay for a couple segments this morning, and I appreciate that. But also talk about the team aspect, the players, the kids aspect of going to a foreign, a foreign country on a trip like this, and talk about how that can be a great experience or a bonding experience. Because sometimes when you're on the road traveling as a group, as the team, that's who you're relying on to get from point A to point B. But kind of talk about that importance as well.
Yeah, and I think it is important from, you know, in 2025 college basketball, in that these guys are all new to each other. And when you go travel for a game, let's take a long one to like UCLA or Oregon, or, you know, you even travel up to Purdue, you know, in a short trip, like those are in and out. Those are business trips in and out. There's no sightseeing and, you know, you're not building team bonding and camaraderie at that point. You're just going in to play a game and turn around and get back home and get back to your normal routine as quick as possible. And this is a different scenario. You know, this is more like a Maui trip. When we went to Maui, we spent a little extra time doing some other things and that. And that's a little bit more what this is like. And this is more of a team bonding experience than your typical, you know, traveling for a game situation. And so I'm assuming and I expect them to, you know, take in more of the sights and scenery and the, you know, what's learn about the culture and things like that, have cool dinners. I know we had like luau dinners and things like that when we would go to Hawaii. And those were just like, I still remember those today. And I don't remember dinners we took to Wisconsin, but I remember the ones that we did in Hawaii and things like that. And so those are the memories. You know, it's a lot different than when, you know, we were younger and when we traveled for stuff like our AAU teams traveled. You know, we probably did more things on our trips than what we did at IU. Because like I said, it becomes a business trip once the season is in place and you're traveling somewhere for a game. Like there's not sightseeing and like, that's the way we were with Coach Knight. Like the other schools were not always that way. I know some people had free time. People were like, what's your curfew? Like, we didn't have a curfew. We weren't allowed to go anywhere. Like we truly were not allowed to leave the floor of our hotel, not even go to the lobby. So yeah, it's just, it's a different world. I know they're not that way. Every coach and every system's not that way. I get it, but that's the way that we were. I expect these guys in this trip to use it. I think the coaching staff specifically will use this more of a bonding experience than your typical travel. Now, they're there to learn stuff, and they're going to be there, you know, when they're playing. I think it's going to be laser focused on trying to figure out what our holes are and what we've got to get better at, which is probably going to be a longer list than what we're really good at. but that's, you know, that's the benefit of this thing. I think a lot of programs would like to do these things, and then I think they got a little bit worn out in doing them over the years. But now with the new transfer portal deal and you know, new teams basically all around the country, I think this will become more of a thing where teams want to do this again now, because like I said, you're learning, you know, 10, 11, 12 new guys on a roster now. It's not just two or three new freshmen. It's almost new rosters all across the board.
All right. Now we got you for the second segment. Is that correct? You got some more time to be with you? All right. Well, we're going to step aside, take a break here. We'll come back and talk some more IU basketball and this new ball club that Indiana is going to have down in Puerto Rico right after we get back with this here on the Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Welcome back to the Indiana Sports Beat Radio. I'm the coach, Shannon Griffith, alongside with former Indiana basketball player, Mr. Todd Leary, and we appreciate his time and taking time out to visit with us today. And we have been talking there a little bit about, you know, the team environment, creating that atmosphere, the camaraderie, the things that are going to get you through a season in the Big Ten, because it's a very physical, draining, all the above. And at one point or in time, you know, there's going to be more than just five guys that are going to be dependent on to step in and make things happen, especially in today's game. But from what you have seen, maybe from watching coaches, former players, you know, teams at West Virginia and Drake, Do you feel that offensively and defensively, it is going to be, in some respects, what you ran at Indiana under Coach Knight in terms of, you know, the motion offense and things like that, and then physical defense?
Physical defense for sure. I think Coach DeVries' system will translate very well to the Big Ten from a defensive perspective. And when I emphasize that, I'm not saying that because I think the offense will struggle. I do think defense is the one thing that I would say is more similar across all the different leagues. Like you can change your defense a lot easier than you can change your offense. And
right.
A lot of times defense is effort. And a lot of it's positioning, and you can get away with, you know, I always say this, and I'm not the first one to say it. I just always repeat it. Like, a good offensive play is going to beat a good defensive play most of the time. And all you can do on defense is try to make the shots as difficult as possible, hopefully without fouling and giving them easy opportunities at the free throw line. And I think that's the happy medium that you have to try to find in the Big Ten. Is it so physical? How do you defend, you know, a guy like Trey Kaufman Wren without fouling him? And how do you, because those are the teams that you're going to need to beat. And how do you go defend those teams without putting them at the free throw line? And I really feel like Coach DeVries' defensive schemes and system will translate very well. I think I'm an offensive minded guy. I've always been that. I was a player that way. Like, I've always kind of been that way. And so, I'm just on the offensive end. Like, how do they gel together? You know, I put a lot of emphasis on shooting the basketball. And I know coaches put more emphasis on defense because it's the easier thing to, you can run a great offense and take a great shot and miss it. And it looks like your offense isn't very good. But on defense, you know, you should be able to work hard enough to get stops and do things like that. So defense to me is easier to coach. Offense is easier to get or harder to get production out of. And I'll be interested to see how they shoot the ball. I think that's been my knock on Indiana basketball for, you know, probably you can always pick out a year or two where they shot the ball maybe a little bit better. But over the last 15 or 20 years, this team just has not consistently been a good shooting team. And that's what I'm hoping that there are multiple guys who can knock down shots. I'm pretty confident that there are, based on the roster and what I have seen from them so far. So, you know, I'm interested to see offensively what that flow looks like. How fast do they play? I think because it dictated it and the roster probably dictated it, I think Coach DeVries' system at Drake was a little slower than what the average might be. But I don't think that that's his scheme. I think his scheme is capable of playing up-tempo. I think, you know, it's just a matter of what the roster looks like and how they play well together. And I think there'll be certain circumstances where they want to play faster, and then there'll be some where they want to slow it down. And that's not dissimilar to what Purdue runs and things like that. Purdue tries to get up and down the floor, but when they need to put it in a grinder, they do. And they'll just sit there and pound the ball when they need to. And I think that's what we're looking for in this Indiana team.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, and again, I know that's kind of a hard question in some respects to really get a true feel or answer for, but it would seem to me, I know that he seems to like, you know, the ball movement and spacing to hopefully create the three shot. You know, he likes to take the shots from outside the arc and stuff. And the other thing is the defensive side of things. I think when he was at Drake, they held a lot of the opponents they played to under 65 points a game. I mean, in today's age of college basketball, to hold teams to under 65, that's a pretty darn good defense.
But I'll tell you this, like I go, whenever I see those stats and I hear the things like that, my first thought is, and again, I go back to, I'm an offensive minded person. your offense is running slow because you can't hold teams to under 65 points if they have blank number of possessions. Like it, they're just going to, I would rather win. Like I've always said this, you know, there were some coaches I did not want to come to Indiana or didn't want Indiana to pursue because I felt like they wanted to win games 60 to 50. You know, like I think Kelvin Sampson is a guy, the perfect basketball game for him is his team would win 60 to 50. And I, as a fan, I would rather watch my team win 90 to 75. I don't care about them holding somebody to under 65. I like flying up and down the court. I like watching the ball go in the hole. So my first thought when I hear about a team that's holding opponents to under 65 points is their offense is probably really slow because you can't give a team that many offensive possessions and hold them to under 65.
No, that's a very good point in all that. And, you know, I think what a good coach does, I don't care if it's football or basketball or, you know, when you look at things that require offensive systems and defensive systems and things of that nature, is they mold their philosophical approach to the game around what the players are capable of.
Yep.
So you can't, you know, you cannot force your philosophy offense and defensively on a team that may not have the athletic capabilities that you have to have. So to me, that's what I think you'll see from him is that he's going to put things in motion with what they can do offensively and defensively based on the talent they have. Now, there's no question in today's age, you can go out and get that talent real quick with transfer portal and all. So it may not be a little bit easier making them live up to the expectation on that end. But I would say this, that's the one big thing with Coach Cignetti as well, is he does a good job of evaluating his talent pool and what he has there, both offensively and defensively. And they mold their philosophical approach on offense and defense to what they have and what those kids can do. So I don't think it will be any difference there with Coach DeVries either. The other thing is that, and I'm going to ask you this from, you know, your perspective as well. Is there been a time where this, I feel like during this time period right now with the hiring of Coach and then the hiring of Coach Cignetti is probably some of the best excitement for Indiana football and basketball as there ever has been, not just in Bloomington or Indianapolis, but the entire state. There just seems like there's a boiling up of excitement and enthusiasm and things like that. Do you have that sense as well?
Yeah, I do. Mainly because, you know, when people will talk to you or stop you on the street and, you know, just say things about Coach Knight or things like that, like the excitement level is there. And that is why, I think it was imperative, whether you liked Mike Woodson or didn't like Mike Woodson or thought he did a good job or didn't think he did a good job, throw all that out the window. The excitement level wasn't there. There were a lot of fans. I talked to a lot of fans that wanted this change a year ago. They wanted Mike Woodson gone a year ago, not necessarily because they thought he sucked, but because the excitement level just wasn't there. Going into last year's basketball season, I mean, we kind of knew what to look for, what to expect, what was probably going to happen. And, you know, like it just wasn't exciting. And to your point, right now, both programs are in a super exciting. The football program coming off of the year they came off of, they have tons of national attention now. People are following Coach Cignetti and the IU football program much differently and closer than they did in the past. Mm-hmm. And so that's a fun, exciting thing to have. And, you know, I always say this on the show and some people rip me for it, but, you know, Indiana could win 10 consecutive national titles in football and they're still going to be a basketball school at the end of the day. And I don't say that to be arrogant or a jerk about it. It's just like, that's what Indiana fans are. Like people don't say, you know, in 49 other states, it's just football.
You know, I mean, it is football. Anyone right now that would try to sell you something saying that the University of Texas is going to become a basketball school, or University of Alabama is going to become a basketball school, I think people would laugh you out of the gym. And that's, you know, Indiana's a basketball school. Their basketball program is in an exciting state right now. They've got a guy. I go back every time and say the same thing I think about Coach DeVries, and that I'm excited because he's a hard worker. You know, this is something that's kind of weird and interesting, but I live in Bloomington. So I drive by Assembly Hall. I don't want to say every day, but let's say at least four or five times a week, and just see whose cars are in the parking lot. What players are, what I know what these guys drive. I know what the coaches drive. I know who's driving what. I know what time they get there a lot. And I will just tell you,
players are driving better cars today than the coaches are.
100%. What the more expensive ones, that's for sure. But yeah, but they're there. Like, that coaching staff is there. And, you know, I hate to kind of wrap myself out on saying I keep track of it, but I could not be more impressed with them. They're there all the time. Lots of hours. They're workers. These players are there a ton, way more than what I saw in past summers. So, you know, that's just a little tiny thing that I don't think is a little tiny thing, but it's big. Like, they're workers. They're hard workers. They're basketball guys. And when you put super uber talented guys, I don't put a ton of stock into what Coach DeVries coached like at Drake, or maybe even 1 year at West Virginia, because you're dealing with, I hope this doesn't come across negatively because it's not intended that way, but you can recruit a lot different, bigger, stronger, faster, more athletic talent at Indiana than you can at Drake. And a lot of that has to do with your NIL budget's way bigger. But a lot of it's just because it's Indiana. You're going to play on TV every single game for your whole career. I know that was one of Coach Knight's big selling points when he was recruiting kids back in my day, was every single game you play is on TV. Every single game, not one will you ever play not on TV. And, you know, with cable and everything, now all the streaming networks, even Drake, all of their games are on TV at some level, on some streaming service. But in Indiana, you're going to play on CBS and you're going to play on ESPN. And when there's Coach Knight's big thing used to always be, you know, that Super Monday, that's a Big Ten games, or I think it was Super Tuesday games, or Big Monday and Super Tuesday. Whatever that one that was the Big Ten slated, I think it was Tuesdays, it was almost always Indiana. And whether we played the 7 o'clock game or the 9 o'clock game, that's what he complained about, because he hated playing those road 9 o'clock games. but yeah, I mean, I'm getting off track here.
All right.
I mean, like, Coach DeVries is – they're hardworking – basketball guys, and what more as a fan could you possibly want than knowing that behind the scenes, on the days when, you know, the lights aren't shining and they're not in front of a camera, they're there showing up. And unfortunately, they got idiots like me that check on them.
Well, you know, that again, I think it says a lot, like you said, about what their focus is, being that this is their first year. And it's not uncommon that you would see coaches there 24/7,
right?
You know, morning to, you know, sunset, probably mostly because it's their first year. They're trying to get everything implemented. They're trying to get things coordinated with support staff and everything else that goes into that. And plus today with NIL and the transfer portal and everything like that, man, oh man, I don't even know if I could coach in today's game with all that, because it's changed so much in a rather short period of time that I don't know if I could handle it in that regard. I think I'd like it because you got money now and you can say, I want to get this kid or that kid, but and you can do it legally.
Right. Yeah. which a lot of people have been doing, a lot of schools have been doing it for a long time. It's just now it's legal. So
yeah, right. And it's not always the money aspect. It's not always the money aspect. It's about those eateries in and around town where you go eat for free here and there. So I'm not going to spill any beans here. But
well, we used to love the day we would get a free meal, and now these guys today, they're free meals, they would laugh at a free meal. Like they could tell us about a free meal.
Yeah, they want to sign the contract to represent them, name, image, and likeness, right?
Right, right.
Man, oh, man. That'd have been a lot of fun back in the day. I bet you'd have loved that in terms of what you would have been able to do with it all. Well, that would have been.
You think I rode Bailey's coattails the way it was? You'd have really seen me riding. I'd been driving that guy around town. Yeah, we would have made just. I'm going to throw myself into this category just because I graduated with Pat Graham and Damon Bailey. I would have been the beneficiary of a lot of NIL money just because of being in the same age of those two guys, because you can sit here and debate careers all you want, but the people who behind the scenes who truly know, like I can guaranteed for a fact tell you, if they had NIL back in my day, Damon Bailey would be the all-time leading money winner in NIL money of any player across the country in any sport, because no one was more popular than that dude. It would have just been, it would have been crazy to see. Now, Coach Knight, I'm sure, would have somehow figured out a way to put a cap on everything, but the amount of money in today's world Damon Bailey could have made in NIL is astronomical.
Yeah. Those laps would have turned into fines, hefty fines for anything that was out of sorts. One quick question here, get your thoughts on it, and then we'll let you go. Really appreciate you giving of your time here today, Todd. And I just saw this morning about John Rothstein, who's, you know, a national analyst, but he's predicting Indiana to finish number 15 in the Big Ten. What's your thoughts on that? I thought that was a little bit low, but then again, you know, what do I know?
Well, I'll say this, though. If you look at it, black and white, you got a team that's not been uber successful over the last blank years. They don't have a great culture in place. They got a brand new coach. They got almost all new players. And, you know, they're playing in a tough league. Like I don't agree with it. I think it will be higher than that. But I also understand where people are coming from. I don't blame him for making that kind of argument. The fun part of that kind of conversation is you would love to get John Rothstein on here and break it down, you know, have like a 2-hour long show and break it down and say, okay, explain to me the 14 teams in front, like why you think they are going to be better than Indiana. Because I think, you know, probably 1 through 3 or 4 maybe is pretty easy to say that, you know, Purdue's going to be up there because they got their whole roster back of a team that's already been uber successful the last couple of years. You're going to throw Tom Izzo up there because it's Tom Izzo. You probably throw in another team or that I can't think of right now that's probably got somebody like I'm just not thinking of. But then, like, what are there? Are there? I'm going to be really stupid here. Is there 18 teams in the Big Ten? 20 teams?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I could pretty easily come up with 8 or 9 teams right off the bat that Indiana's going to be better than. So for him to come up with 15th seems a little almost like he's trying to stick it to him a little bit, like you're trying to prove a point. Maybe he's got something against him. I don't know. But keep this in mind. You know, you got to read between the lines sometimes. There are certain national analysts, if you want to call them that, you know, if you get shunned by a university or you don't get the access you feel like you need, or your seat wasn't as good at the game as it should have been, you might not rank them as high.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's the case here. I'm not saying it's not the case here, but there's sometimes other factors involved in, I mean, heck, he just might not like Coach DeVries. They might've had a run in at some point in time. He may just be sticking it to him. But at the end of the day, he put Indiana 15th probably for a reason, because if he puts Indiana 7th or 5th, we probably don't talk about it near as much as if we say 15th.
Yeah, well, you're right.
15th, we've said John Rothstein a whole bunch in the last week, sometimes with some adjectives next to it that he wouldn't appreciate.
Well, again, I think everybody in some ways or another in the back of their mind is hoping that Coach can flip a Coach Cignetti type of year, where he really flips things on their head and gets this going. But as again, you know, as you know, as a player, you get hot and it's one of those things where things just start to go for you and shots fall and all that good stuff. Yep. So we'll have to wait and see. Todd, I appreciate your insights and expertise and wish you best of luck here over the weekend and throughout. I know that you've got your thing with myjumpshot.com. Again, a pretty good deal where you get the chance to get the best shooter around to give you some pointers on how to shoot the jumper. I may have to come out of retirement, and you'll have to give me some pointers. Of course, I'm about 20 pounds heavier than I ever was. So
we can work on that.
All right, partner. Well, hey, you have a great day and a great weekend. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Todd Leary, former Indiana basketball player, giving his insights on the Indiana Hoosiers and their trip down to Puerto Rico. And then, of course, some insights on the coaching staff as well. We're going to step aside here, take a break. When we come back, we're hoping to have Zach Osterman join us here, but we'll have to wait and see right after this here on the Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Welcome back to the Indiana Sports Beat Radio. I'm the coach, Shannon Griffith. Thank you for joining us here today. And don't forget to take a look at some of the sponsors that we have here. Hard Truth Distillery down there in Brown County. Of course, Annie Moore Honda as well. Cheryl Sizemore, if you're looking for a home down in the central Indiana part of the state, she'd be someone that you should reach out to as the housing market kind of picking up some here of late. And she would be a great resource to get in some of her expertise to see if you're looking to move to that part of Indiana. Give her a call. I'm sure she'd appreciate that as well. Thank you, Todd Leary, joining us earlier with great insights from Todd. He always does have some great insights, but we've got another one that has some great insights as well, joining us right now, that being Mr. Zach Osterman. Zach, how you doing, my man? I know you didn't think you're going to see my face here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. You probably thought, am I on Hoosier tailgate this morning?
Well, my computer was being finicky about my internet, so I'm sorry I'm late. I apologize. Oh,
don't worry about it, because I've had the same problem up here when we was on with Todd. It just all of a sudden like went into this slow motion and then everything just dropped and kicked us all off. So just that typical Friday, you know, trying to make your weekend a little longer than it should be on Friday, but we'll see what all happens. But really appreciate you joining us here. I know this is getting to be a time of year where things are really ramping up for you. Big Ten Media Days right around the corner. Are you heading out to Vegas?
No, we split those up just because the travel to Vegas for something like Media Days is a little bit much. So Mike Nieselick will be there. And then I'll do the Puerto Rico trip for basketball in August. So it's kind of a flip between those two.
Yeah, we'll get to that here too, because you get your insights there and stuff. You know, that's interesting about the Big Ten Media Days, being that the Big Ten for the better part of I don't know how long, most of the media days were centrally located, and not, you know, off the beaten path. But now, because of the expansion, you know, you're going to see some of these media days that are going to be out there on the West Coast or East Coast for that matter. What's your thought about that? Does that create issues and problems for coverage, or how do you look at that now with the Big Ten Network basically providing wall-to-wall coverage?
Yeah, I mean, it's I think it really more than anything just speaks to the shifting nature of like the purpose of media days. You know, there was a time when as a reporter, you genuinely needed, you know, to go talk to coaches that you maybe only saw once a year, that maybe you could get them if you picked up the phone, but otherwise then, right. You know, there was a Twitter. They weren't doing off-season interviews and things. You know, you needed to know who are the players that are going to be most meaningful for you. Who are the guys that maybe are going to be breakout stars, who's injured, you know, whatever. And even just to maybe talk to other media too, because again, you would try to keep in touch, but you couldn't, text, you couldn't follow on Twitter and things like that. And so there was maybe more of a utilitarian purpose in terms of just actually setting the table for a conference football or basketball season. Now it has become a much more made for television event. And you know, the Big Ten Network will be there. You know, CBS Sports will likely have a setup like a live
right.
stage somewhere there. Someone, you know, somebody else might. It's always been football has always been different from basketball in the sense that it's always been a little bit of a like kind of a scene setter for the coming year. It's sort of like the kickoff event for just the athletic year in general, whereas basketball is kind of just wedged into the calendar a little bit during football season. But you know, as they move these things around, you know, they used to always be in like a basement ballroom at a big hotel in Chicago. Now it has become much more about the television production and the television product.
Right.
So, you know, when you move them, I think it's at Allegiant Stadium, if I'm not mistaken. It's obviously been on the field at Lucas Oil Stadium. So that's a different, you know, that's a little bit more made for TV too, right? You know, we're live on the field. It's just the shifting nature of that event.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to get your quick take on all that. And, because I know the importance for all that being having the access that you did, because sometimes you don't get that access when the season starts, you know, that you get there at the Big Ten Media Day. So it can be a very important event from that standpoint. Wanted to jump back here before we get too far into this, but you know, we're now in the ref sharing era. July 1st was that date. Now we've got the NIL. Of course, you've got to submit things now to the clearinghouse to have that validated. Deloitte's NIL Go, I believe, is the name of that and such. But now that we're with the sharing, and I know that you've done some articles on this and some and takes and everything, how do you see Indiana breaking this down with this 20.5 million aspect of things? I would talk this morning, Michigan is already in trouble. They're projecting a $27 million shortfall in their budget, with 20 million of it being because of the rev share. So that's kind of hard to believe of one of the top programs in the country and name and all that. But what is Indiana's steps involved in this, and what are they looking to do in that dividing up of the money percentage wise and things of that nature?
So thus far, and you know, we're not going to find out until we get a look at Indiana's financials next year for, you know, the year we're talking about now, that like the NCAA financial report is submitted in January for the previous fiscal year. So the 24-25 fiscal year, which at least is the one where Indiana is trying to build that hole into its budget to anticipate revenue sharing. We'll get a look at that in the winter. And then it won't be until the following winter that we see the full sort of financial sheet of this was how Indiana handled it. This is how everyone handled it when they were paying players. So far as I know, Indiana is not running a deficit. Now, it has made a number of cuts. Obviously, it laid several people off at one point last year. There have been, I think it's fair to say, a number of cutbacks in, you know, just kind of across the board, things like travel, you know, for recruiting, or, you know, maybe, you know, sports aren't going to go cross country quite so often in the non-conference, right, things like that. You know, it wouldn't shock me if Indiana got to a place where it was running a bit of a deficit. This is, I mean, you know, if you think about on a, let's say, a balance sheet for an athletics department making $150 million a year, I mean, 20 million is, you know, that's what, like 15%, something like that. You know, you can't just carve a hole that size into your budget overnight. Now, you know, there have been ways in which obviously athletics departments have been able to prepare for this for well over 12 months. And I think everyone's going to continue to figure out ways to adapt. But there are also, you know, I think a lot of schools are anticipating larger scholarship, larger overall sort of economic impact in the form of things like added scholarships and, you know, added opportunities for athletes. And basically that there's going to be even more spending over the top of the 20.5 as a result of just, you know, the introduction of revenue sharing, not money that's specifically coming out of rev share budget, but, you know, when a meteor like this lands, there are bound to be some aftershocks as well.
Right.
And the number's going up, you know, it's going to go up by 4% next year and, you know, 4% compounded the year after that. We'll see, you know, they're going to kind of take a look at the whole situation in year four, but everyone knows that hole is only going to keep getting deeper. And for at least the first little bit here, also remember that conference media distributions are going to be hit because there was also the 2.4 $2.6 billion settlement going backward to athletes, backdated to, I think, 2016, athletes that could claim a portion of that settlement. The NCAA and the member conferences are paying that mostly through TV money. So eventually the TV money will stabilize, especially for a conference like the Big Ten. But for the moment, that number is going to go down on an annual projected basis because that money's got to go back and backfill the actual settlement part of the house settlement that everybody forgot about when we talked about rev share. So, you know, I can tell you it stresses Scott Dolson out. you know, he's not alone in that, obviously. But this is just the reality everybody's got to find. And I think, you know, what everyone's desperate to do is try to find ways not to cut sports and make it to that point. You know, Indiana's not at that point yet, but that is kind of that's a little bit of kind of the nuclear scenario, if you want to say.
Yeah, I know that Indiana did cut about 10% of their administrative staff. They had 13 layoffs or retires in their athletic department, and they left 12 positions unfilled to help with the cuts that we have seen thus far. Now, I understand that the way the money's being put out through the rush year is it looks as if football is going to get anywhere from 70-75% of that cut. And it's understandable that was the way it would be. And then the, you know, basketball, maybe women, men's and women get somewhere in that 20%, you know, total between the two. But if you look at it that way, it's about $15.4 million that Coach Cignetti and staff have to dole out, per se. Have you heard anything about how they're going to do that, whether they're going to tier it versus a first-year player versus a fourth-year player? Are they going to, you know, is it going to be position-specific? Because, you know, every year there may be a kid come in that's a true freshman, never stepped foot on the campus or had played a game, and he may be making more than somebody else in the locker room. Just from the standpoint of a five-star or four-star, what have you heard anything about how they're looking to do that?
Yeah, nothing specific. And you mentioned the overall numbers. You know, when I talked to Scott Dolson, the split. Sorry, that's my email going off. The split was a little bit shy of 75% for football, which is 75 is kind of like an industry standard number. That's what I think a lot of bigger schools are going to be committing. Close to 20% for men's basketball, which is probably on the high end for football schools. Obviously, everyone expects the Big East schools, some of them, to have pretty robust rev share budgets because they don't have to serve football. They obviously don't have the same income streams, revenue streams that a Big Ten school will or an SEC school will, but they don't have to feed the football beast. So your UConns, your Marquettes will probably go percentage-wise north of that. The next two sports after that will be women's basketball and volleyball. And then there's going to be kind of a, you know, the term that Scott used was the rest sprinkled around the department, sprinkled around the other programs. I thought it was interesting what Mike Bobinski said, and I suspect a lot of people will look at it this way, that they were reserving a small portion, like less than 1% at Purdue for the recruiting and retention of elite athletes. So basically, I think what he's trying to say is if we have the opportunity, for example, to bring in an Olympic swimmer, you know, this we don't have necessarily a place carved out for swim dive every year in this 20.5, but we can go to this reserve fund for an athlete like that. As far as how it's split up, and this is true not just of football, but in general, I think a lot of that is up to the coach, and a lot of that is going to be negotiated between the coach, the player, if the player has representation, which so many
do
now.
Most likely do, yeah.
I would not be surprised if there's an extent to which you follow the NFL model, which is, you know, your older and more established players are the ones that are getting the lion's share of your money, but there probably will be, as there would be with a first-round draft pick in the NFL, right. You know, a small handful of first- or second-year players that are really at a level that either because you needed to maybe put a little bit more up to get them when we're competing against somebody else, or just because you think they are at that level, you know, you pay them a little bit more. And obviously the NIL can still come into it, and, we'll see what happens at the clearinghouse. That's kind of a question unto itself, but I think it's really up to the coach, and like I said, I would not be shocked if there's a sort of a mimicking of the NFL in some respects there. And I think even insofar as if you want to use another sport example, I suspect a lot of coaches won't spend every dollar that they have, because you'll want, you know, a little bit of leeway. If, for example, you need a couple transfers in the spring that you didn't, you know, expect, think about like a baseball GM who goes into the season with a payroll number, but then he also goes into the season knowing if he needs to, he can increase that payroll number to, you know, X dollars by the trade deadline, and that there's going to be extra money available to go get a couple pieces if, you know, need a starter, they're in a pennant race, they might be a World Series contender, et cetera. I think, you know, maybe to use a more IU-specific example, Indiana didn't think it was going to need another slot receiver until Tyler Morris tore his ACL in the spring. So I think there's also kind of that idea of, like, don't spend it all, because, you know, at the end of every academic year, and that's when it rolls over, you're approaching the end of every academic year, you come out of spring – somebody might be available you didn't expect. You might have a need you didn't expect. So it's up to the coach. And I think, you know, everyone is kind of learning in real time what the best strategies and the best practices are for kind of marshaling that money around.
No question. And, you know, you talked about some of this, but, you know, I think you're already seeing some athletic departments become creative, like Indiana with Scott Dolson and having the, you know, buying the seat in Memorial Stadium for like $250-$300 per year or to that degree. But, you know, all that money is to help offset some of these costs. And boy, I just don't see how we don't see advertising on jerseys and pants because of the need for dollars. And I just think that's another avenue that will be interesting to see, because they've kind of opened the Pandora's box for that when you think about it already. So it's one of those things, we'll wait and see what happens. I'm sure it's not going to be a smooth trail, especially with the NIL go with Deloitte in terms of determining whether something's valid or not. I mean, it's one of those things that some of the coaches are already crying foul in some of the conferences and some of these media days that, you know, NIL money is being doled out by the coaches and stuff there at different institution, which is a no-no. You know, you're supposed to have that's supposed to be completely outside the realm of the institution. So we're going to see some of this and see what type of punishments will be laid out in that regard, if there is any to be had. We'll see with that. What with, you know, Indiana's football recruiting this year, and then I get into something real quick here before I let you go, but in as short as time as humanly possible, they're ranked in the top 25 nationally already. It looks like they're going to be in the top 10 rankings in the Big Ten in recruiting. And then, you know, they've gotten some four stars this year that has really been the icing on the cake of this class. You know, and you're from your perspective, outside of the winning, I know that helps, but he's only won 1 year. What has been the secret sauce with this recruiting class from your perspective that has catapulted them into the position they've been with some of these recruits already?
Yeah, I think, and I'm trying to pull up the commit list on three, and the ad blocker is giving me trouble here. But I think, as you'll know, obviously, with even more experience in this space than me, you know, this stuff can kind of become a real momentum check that, you know, guys see other really good players kind of jumping on, and they think, you know, I want to be a part of that. I think this staff clearly has an ability to identify and secure, you know, really high level talent, you know, and like last year, and obviously it's the level you're talking about, but last year when everyone was saying, well, you know, is Kurt Cignetti going to keep winning when he doesn't have these JMU guys? I said, well, I don't know, but it's worth pointing out he's the one that recruited and developed all these players. So his process clearly works, kind of no matter where he is. And I got the list up. Indiana's got four-star players, according to On3. They're ninth in the Big Ten. They're 26th nationally, which are all really good numbers. I wouldn't be shocked if, when you look at the size of the class, I think they're at 22 now. I wouldn't be stunned if they're close to done at the high school level. Cignetti's always talked about like 20 to 25 high school,
right.
12 to 15, maybe a few more transfers, kind of his ideal number. And I know he would at least like to get away from a world where Indiana's constantly having to reload, you know, 30, 35 transfers every single year. But I think it's a combination of you have a program that's got real momentum. I mean, I don't think we should underestimate that. I mean, they went to the playoff last year. Like that's not a small thing. And I'm not belittling, for example, a Pinstripe Bowl season or a Gator Bowl season. Those were really years, really important years for Indiana. They are not the same thing as reaching the college football playoff. Like that is the pinnacle, really. And if you can tell kids there is a viable path to the playoff, to that stage, and then in the meantime, you're going to max out your rev share number, you're going to have, you know, good NIL support, et cetera, so that the resources are going to be there, then kids are going to listen. And when you couple that to a staff that can point to some guys in the NFL, can point to some guys on All-American lists, that can point to a ton of winning and a ton of success, then you're going to get – kids' attention, like you just are. And like I said, I think it also becomes something where you gain a little bit of momentum. And it's not quite this way in football the way it is in basketball, because it's not like a kid in Naperville, Illinois is going to know on a first name basis a kid in Sarasota, Florida.
Right.
But there is still this ability for guys to organically build that momentum together. And you get three or four that have an impressive offer list. They're all state. They're, you know, Under Armour All-American nominees, this and that, and they're all in, and they start kind of cheerleading for the whole group. Suddenly it turns everybody's head. And so it's, you know, listen, the other thing I would say about this is Indiana's recruiting well. You know, it's not like we woke up one day and they had five of the top 15 players in the class committed. They are recruiting like a program that is putting more money, more emphasis, and frankly, more success into its football program should be recruiting at this level. And, you know, these are the results.
Yeah. And there's no question that the commitment from Scott Dolson and Pam Witten, the president, has been a godsend when it comes to having success. And that's what they need to have with football, because you have to have the resources to go out and do the things you need to do to win. But that all happens by recruiting the right people and then coaching and having a staff that's a really good coaching staff. And I think you're correct. This coaching staff, when they head on the road, now that they have brand awareness with the season they had, college football playoffs, there's a lot of guys on this staff that have, I call it relatability with kids. They can really sit down and capture kids' attention and get that connection you need to have in recruiting to lure them to Indiana. Last thing before I let you go for Indiana football, who are the top five guys you think are important that you're going to watch this season on your radar per se, that, you know, these are the guys that have to go if Indiana's going to do what they got to do.
Yeah, I think four are pretty easy. Yeah. You know, Fernando Mendoza, D'Angelo Pons, Aiden Fisher, Mikhail Kamara. I think, you know, both because of the nature of the positions they play and also especially with the three guys that are holdovers from last year, how good we know they can be, where we know their level is. I think that, you know, those are kind of obvious ones. If you pushed me for a fifth, you know, it would be easy to say Carter Smith because Mendoza's a righty, so mm-hmm. left tackle still is blind side. I think, you know, if I'm looking for like a breakout player, Omar Cooper had a pretty good year last year. I suspect that Kurt Cignetti thinks there's a lot more there. And if you suddenly have two all-conference receivers with a good offensive line and a really good quarterback, then you become even more difficult to defend, even in the most elite settings, even against an Oregon, even against a Penn State, because suddenly your offensive line looks a little better because that ball's coming out faster. The ball's you're tearing off chunk plays a little bit more. You got the defense on its heels.
Right.
Those different kinds of things. So, you know, if I'm looking for like kind of a breakout player, it's maybe somebody like Omar Cooper, or it's, you know, one of the guys that brought in at tackle, or maybe even to some extent, is there another level for Amari Farrell, who was very, very good last season? And if there is, then he goes up to an All-American kind of level. And suddenly we're looking at a defense that's got 3-4, you know, plus All-Americans in its ranks.
Right.
And, you know, if you have that, that's obviously that's a recipe for a lot of winning. And so
absolutely.
Like I said, the first four for me are pretty easy. I think you can debate the fifth in a few different directions. But that's a good sign for Indiana, because that means that there's not a position where you got to figure some things out along the defensive line. You don't know exactly how Elijah Hardy is going to step into more snaps and so forth. But that means that there's not a position out there where you think, boy, this just is no good. You know, Indiana's going to spend the whole season just trying to sort of, you know, hide its secondary or its problems at linebacker or its, you know, its offensive backfield. It means that there is intriguing opportunity at basically every position on the field. And I think that's, you know, if you're an Indiana fan, you should be excited about that.
Absolutely. And there's no question that this team does have that capability. Can they put it all together? Can they stay healthy? We're going to see that in a very short period of time as they come in here the end of July to get started. And August 30th, we'll be here before you know it against Old Dominion, 2:30 in Memorial Stadium. Kickoff. Zach, appreciate you joining us, my man. Look forward to getting you back on the Hoosier tailgate here shortly as we get ready for this 2025 season.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Good to see you, Ken.
All righty. Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, come back and talk to Kyler Staley from the Hoosier.com and get some of his insights on the recruiting for this Indiana basketball team. All right here on the Indiana Sports Beat Radio with the coach, Shannon Griffith. We'll see. Carries the Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Cole. And appreciate them as I do some football stuff for them. And we're gearing up for high school football here shortly, as that will be getting kicked off and ready to roll. So it's my favorite time of year. Football is in the air. And I'm happy that we're going to get back to Indiana football here shortly. Remember, you can join me each and every Thursday night at 7:30 on the Hoosier Football Tailgate. We'll be back at it next Thursday. And then when we get to the start of the season, we will go twice a week on Mondays and Thursdays at 7:30 as well to give you a whole breakdown of the previous game on Saturday for the Hoosiers with video analysis and such. As well, on Thursday at 7:30, we will talk about their next upcoming opponent, that first one being Old Dominion down in Memorial Stadium on August the 30th, 2:30 in the afternoon. We'll have you all set and ready to go for that first game on the Hoosier Football Tailgate. as you walk into Memorial Stadium, knowing everything you need to know about Old Dominion. But again, thank you for joining me here today and all of the week. Look for Jim Coyle back on Monday. For now, I'm the coach, Shannon Griffith. This has been the Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We'll see you and have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.